It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Taylor, joined by Josh Brown.
Oh, hello, Scott.
Oh, hello. I'm Kirsten Rhea.
Oh, hello.
Oh, hello. Now, we're going to do we're in the middle of this podcast talking about all sorts of bugs and glitches and things that we hate that I feel like have dogged this generation across the board. But I also want to open with some questions. Now, you can go over to the hashtag WCGP over on Twitter, leave your own thoughts and whatever you'd like us to get to, and we'll get to bits and bobs at the beginning and the end of most episodes. So we're just going to do some quick questions for the beginning of this one. First question from Dom1582, who says, what is the most beautiful game you've ever played? Well, this makes me go to Uncharted and Naughty Dog stuff, but I'm actually going to go with Final Fantasy VII Remake. I know that game has some textural issues and some flowers don't load in when they really need to, but just in terms of sheer rendering, the character models, the frame rate for the most part holds up, all the particle effects and the spells and the summons, I adore that game. How about you, Josh?
Well, honestly, Final Fantasy VII is up there. That thing looks absolutely gorgeous. In all the cutscenes, it doesn't really matter if the textures are bad in the background, because the trade-off you get is some of the, you know, highest quality character models, like you said, I've ever seen. Cloud looks amazing. How is his face so perfect? Never mind, you know, like Aerith or anyone else in the game. So yeah, that would be up there for me because the vistas are lovely. But I think it has to be Red Dead Redemption 2, which I will bang on about all the time, because even though that doesn't have the, you know, the most groundbreaking character models are the best, you know, facial animation. It creates this almost picturesque kind of backdrop with every single frame. Like for an open world game, it feels so directed when you're, you know, you're in the wilderness and you're looking at these lovely vistas in the background. You've got the thunder coming in. It's the best skybox I've ever seen in a game. And I think it adds so much to the painterly quality of it that every single time I stop and look around, I think, this is magnificent.
Didn't they say that they were inspired by like old like Western oil paintings and stuff? Because it is like, pause it at any second, it just looks absolutely lush.
Yeah, landscape paintings, I think they said. And that absolutely bleeds in. As soon as you know that bit of trivia, it's like this whole art direction now suddenly makes sense. Because I remember the first time, you know, you leave your camp in Valentine and you get to like the big rolling hills in the background and like the valleys and stuff. And I just remember thinking that looked gorgeous and I couldn't wait to climb them.
Did they put a photo mode in Red Dead 2?
They did, and it's beautiful, Scott.
It's magnificent.
We've talked about the photo mode many times before, so I love that you've forgotten that.
I don't know anything before the current time. And even then, it feels like yesterday was a year ago. So yes, not to worry. Kirsten, what is the best looking, most beautiful game you've ever played?
In my eyes, it has to be the Bioshock games, whether that's 1, 2, and Infinite. I love them. I just think that... I remember when I first played Bioshock, and again, this is when it first came out, so it wasn't like... as it's not like a HD remaster like what we have now, but it still just blew me away when you are lowering down into Rapture and just all the lights, and there's like fish and whales swimming around, and there's like neon lights and everything's like art deco but like the 50s, and it's just beautiful. It blew me away. And then even in Infinite, like that caught me completely off guard, because it's all kind of like, you know, you're in the sky, but it's more sort of like there's like churches and it's like a cult, and there's like these beautiful candles and buildings and churches and cathedrals and statues, and just everything about Bioshock is just fantastic to me. I could just sit there, and especially as I have a huge fear of the ocean, it doesn't make sense as to why that would appeal to me. But I just think it's beautiful just seeing these massive fish fly overhead and the coral, and I love it. If I could live underwater, it would be lovely.
I will 1,000,000% back a fear of the ocean. I don't know why, but I hate the idea of a giant expanse of stuff that if I get stuck in it, I can't get out of it, or I'm too far away to get back to land. It's a bad time. A quick question from Trotty XD. What are your thoughts on the Kill All Humans remake/remaster? I don't know if you guys were Kill All Humans fans. I think it's Destroy All Humans, actually, not Kill All Humans.
Oh, Destroy All Humans. Oh, yes, with the aliens.
Yeah, the little dude. I forget what the hell that guy was called, but he looked like the Area 51 standard thing. It's like Necro or Necron or something like that. But anyway, Josh,
For me, that was always a game that I just saw in shops and played around a friend's house. Like, I loved it when I played it, but it was never a game I owned. It was always one of those, you know, after school, I'd go around my mate Kyle's and we'd play, like, GTA Vice City. We'd play that, and we'd play some co-op shooters, probably. So I associated that with my childhood, but always at arm's length. So I don't know whether I'll play it now, if that makes sense. Although I do, you know, have a major fondness for it still.
Two things. One, that character's called Crypto. I'd never
Yes, I just remember. I was going to say, I was like, it's Crypto, it's Crypto.
It's so close. And the other thing, I don't know if you guys played Stubbs. Stubbs the zombie. Yeah, yes. See, give me Stubbs. Like, where's that?
Give me Stubbs. Bring it back. Let's start a petition. Destroy All Humans. Fine, good, okay, sure. Some people out there liked it. Stubbs the zombie, into a tank.
I mean, look, I like the idea. Stubbs was like, I'm sure BioWare made it, or someone who you wouldn't expect, Bungie or something. Sorry, not BioWare, I'm sure Bungie made it. Someone who you wouldn't expect made Stubbs the zombie, where you just play as a dude, and you can resurrect other zombies, and you can pick your head off and throw your head at people, and it was great. And I get that in Destroy All Humans, you can throw cows at people, but it's just not the same. That's what I want. Last quick question from Maxine Sternhorn. What is a game that you all love that most people hate? Now, this is hard. We've done this as a chatty face thing before. It's hard. It's rare that I love like a proper B or C tier thing, but I love the old Blood Omen games, Blood Omen 2, which is one of the Legacy of Kain games where you play as the evil dude, Kain. And I get that, like, they never played that well. But you can, you know, you can go into mist form and you can punch a guy so hard from behind that you punch their heart out and you show them their heart and then you drop it on the floor and then they die. And I thought that was the coolest thing ever when I was, like, 8. So I don't know about you guys, though, what you would have instead.
That is pretty cool. But I thought, well, Scott, we must have talked about this before. What
you'd think so.
There's something you must have hated that I've loved. It's hard to pick out because I can't remember.
It's different if it's something that I hate that you love, because I don't like most things, but it depends depends what it is. I like to try and be all critiquey about it.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Might have to come back to this one. I don't.
Yeah, we can start
Stubbs the zombie, probably. Pricks didn't like that at the time, so
I don't know if I don't know if Stubbs reviewed very well. Josh, you love the Animal Crossing two player mode. You're a big fan of hanging out as a second player on the island in New Horizons, and most people hate that.
That is true. I will defend that until the day I die. That is some of the best social gaming I've had in a long time, even if there is a bit of resentment at my girlfriend that she's taken over the town and started a dictatorial, regime based around making me have no bells. So that's fine. Okay.
Is it possible for her to make a ring of river that would lock you in and then you can't get anywhere?
Well, she's just unlocked the ability to terraform the island. So that is probably what's in store for me when I log on later today. So yeah, I assume so.
Like one of those prank videos where you wake up on a bed and you're in the middle of a lake and you just got to deal with it. That's just what it is. Anyway, the meat of this podcast was inspired by Fallout 76, because as much as the Wastelanders update is this giant overhaul and they've added NPCs and they've kind of changed the quest design around, in regards to all the like the fetch questy stuff doesn't come in until after the first few hours and you do get to have more of like a old school Fallout experience at the beginning. That game is still a big old mess and there's already so many glitch compilations and just character models bugging out. Textures going all over the place. Things where even if you look through like one doorway to another room, it's just a black void and stuff like that. And so I wanted to do a general sort of discussion on the idea of bugs and glitches and how we've kind of got used to them across this generation. But I feel like it kind of goes hand in hand with that question we just had about beautiful looking games and stuff like Final Fantasy VII, Red Dead, Uncharted and Naughty Dog and things like that. They've pushed the bar so much that I kind of want to ask you guys, do you think that level of bugs and glitches and like a lack of polish from something like Fallout, is that still acceptable at all? Or like, where do you kind of come down on it? I guess, Kirsten, we should start with you.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not acceptable, really, is it? Because it's a game that you are paying a lot of money for. I think when you kind of forgive it in a way when they're like goofy glitches and they make you laugh because you're like, oh, this is really silly. But then you remember, like, oh, wait, I paid 60 quid for this game and it's unplayable. And that's what I think is just unacceptable about it, is when it gets to the point where it completely ruins the experience. It's not funny anymore. It's just unplayable. And so you can't actually enjoy the game that they have hyped up so much. And I remember them seeing the trailer for it, and I thought, oh my God, I can't wait for a new Fallout. And then I just didn't buy it, purely because the amount of glitches that people were talking about, and the fact that there was like no NPCs, and you were literally just in this vast wasteland of nothing. And it just seems so cheeky to just charge someone so much money for a pretty much an uncompleted, bugged out game. It doesn't make any sense to me.
It's like paying full price for like a like an early access, like the because I think that, I mean, I've got a list, we can get to some stuff later, of like the likes of WWE 2K20 or Assassin's Creed Unity, like games that really landed in horrible states and were still sold for full price. And that idea of like, yeah, you are essentially buying into an early access program even if you don't realize it. And it's just like, yeah, like and price is a huge thing too, like the cost of Fallout 76 back at launch is the same as something that is uber polished, like a Red Dead 2 or something like that. Josh, what do you think?
Yeah, I think we see stuff like this come in waves. You mentioned Assassin's Creed Unity then. That was like a big talking point, obviously, back in the day about, okay, this has gone too far. We need to sort this out. And then Ubisoft, for their efforts for a while, started to sort this out. But then you slip back into old habits where that becomes acceptable again. And then you get, a Ghost Recon Breakpoint, which you mentioned in the news the other day, which has again caused that company to, kind of look at their catalog and say, look, we can't push these games out anymore. The release dates aren't the most important thing. So I feel like we hit this point every few years, and it's difficult when it is excused and when old habits are kind of, fallen back into. I think the excuse that a lot of publishers had for a long time was, we're making these massive sandbox games. We're making huge RPGs, so obviously we can't pick up on every single bug. And we know that publishers and developers have what they call shippables, which are bugs that they know exist, but they don't have the time to get to before launch. And if they don't break the game, then the game can go out and it's fine. And I feel like we need to get away from that mentality. Like, if a game's not ready, a game's not ready. And you can't make a first impression more than once. For as much as the likes of, Destiny bounced back from perhaps a disappointing launch experience, they more or less had to drag themselves, tooth and nail for a full year before they got the player base back and they got people to trust them again. And I don't think it's worth the hassle. Like, it's
Well,
especially with the way, we don't accept it like we used to, so it's not worth it.
A couple of things from that, like, where do you guys come down on, yeah, games that do sort themselves out over time? Have they used up their first impression? Like, isn't like No Man's Sky, for me, is the most high profile example of something that has taken years to become like a genuinely recommendable thing. I always like what they were going for at launch, but like now it is this big robust thing, and Fallout's trying to get there. But where do you come down on that idea of, like, depending on how something's been sold, like, will you give a game another chance, or is it just like, come on, like, I've spent the money, or in this case, like, I didn't spend the money, but you blew your chance. Like, how do you feel about that stuff?
Yeah, I think if you've already spent that money, then you kind of have to give it that chance, because, like I said, the money's gone. It's at that point you're like, well, I've spent my money, so you have to fix it, because I will enjoy this game. This is what I've paid for. But I think for people like me, for example, who hasn't bought the game, it's gonna take a lot for me to actually purchase it, because it's like, it's still, for me, in my eyes, it's still way too expensive to pay for and for me to play. I feel like it's still too buggy, and it's not redeemed itself to the point where I'm like, yeah, I'll happily pay 60 quid for it. No, like, they need to admit for their ex they need to take responsibility for the mistakes that have been made. Yeah, they fixed it and it's starting to get back to that point of being playable again, but like, people still aren't going to trust them enough to completely hand over all this money and be like, oh yeah, okay, like, if you say so. Like, no, at least give us like some sort of like discount, or be like, yeah, we screwed up here, we'll knock £30 off or £20 off, like, at least do something like that. But to be able to charge full price still, I just think it's really like, I'm not I'm not happy with it.
I think consumer trust is a massive thing as well. Like, there's certain devs that you kind of trust will give you a polished product. Like, for as much as CD Projekt Red were like kind of, it's weird, like Witcher 3 obviously is one of the best games of the generation, but it didn't launch very well necessarily compared to, in these kind of conversations. Like, there was that whole downgrade controversy compared to the trailers that were shown earlier. And I was always happy with the version that we got, but I could see if you were hung up on the stuff that they showed beforehand that you could be like, what the hell, this isn't what it was before. You know, and The Witcher had its share of bugs as well, from like Roach levitating over the place to like even Geralt's legs betraying him and stuff. But yeah, Josh, when you come down on all of this stuff.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned The Witcher 3, because yeah, that did have a lot of performance issues. Like, when you went into the cities in that game at launch, the frame rate would just tank, things would be problematic. But I think it's almost case by case. It's just kind of, it's kind of whether or not you think a game's taken the piss, you know what I mean? It's like, if the game's good and the game's ambitious and it's sort of struggling under that ambition, but everything else is, you know, firing off and it's really enjoyable, you can almost forgive it, especially if it's something like, you know, the frame rate or a couple of weird bugs that don't necessarily break quests or something. But if the game's bad and it has them, you have far less patience for it, you know what I mean? You are far eager to kind of be like, look, the game itself isn't good, so then there's all these bugs, so what, something's gone wrong at a fundamental level. I'm actually quite the opposite to Kirsten though, in a way, because for me, if I buy a game at launch for full price and it's no good and then they fix it later on down the line, I almost wash my hands with them, you know what I mean? I've put the hours in at launch and they've disappointed me, so why do they deserve another go, whether it's good or bad? I'm more inclined to buy something pre-owned or something after the fact when all the updates have been added. Like No Man's Sky, I will buy that one day.
No, you won't. Stop saying you will. You won't ever buy it.
I'm going to buy it one day. Fallout 76, I always think that I will finally boot that game up, you know what I mean? But something like Anthem, if that ever gets better...
Remember
that?
Anthem.
It's back. We're coming back to Anthem. If that game ever gets better, I'm going to remember the 6 hours I put into it at launch and the disappointment I had. And it's hard to get away from that first impression. Yeah. I'm not saying I'm right. You know what I mean? I think you can enjoy that things change. And it's good that the developers put in the hard work. But the first impressions are important. And it's hard from a personal level to shake them off.
But I guess presumably you'll be buying Ghost Recon Breakpoint as well, like based on the super deluxe version that thing will turn into.
Scott Telford, you joke, but it's in the sale currently, and I've been eyeing it up. When you fix it, I will get on with that with my friend, and we might have a good time. I don't know.
That friend will not be me. It's I guess, like, in terms of that, like, that's one of the ways that you can kind of show developers that, like, look, this stuff isn't okay, or show publishers and studios in general that, you know, if their player numbers get completely savaged, like, and no one comes back, they put all the time and effort into saving something further down the line and then no one comes back for it, it does kind of prove that that business model is broken. Like, it's not really going to work itself out. And one of the only ways to recoup funds at that time, when so much time has passed, because you have sale prices for the unit sales, is to either inject a microtransaction storefront or, I don't know, try and do some DLC practice or something like that. Well, I was going to say as well, do you remember, like, in the 2000s or when we were younger, when we played games when we were kids and stuff, I just don't remember glitches being that big of a deal on the same scale that they are or have been this generation.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
And that's something that, like, you noticed, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, the difference is there were no patches back then. Once you printed something to a disc, for the most part, you had to live with that. So if there was a game-breaking bug, you would have to recall all the copies and make new copies, and that's an expensive thing to do. Now we have so much more leeway when it comes to everything being online that if your game's broken at launch, you can perhaps have it fixed that same night if the coders are working around the clock. So I just think there's more leeway because nothing's set in stone anymore. Everything is malleable. Everything is constantly in flux. And if the consequence of putting out a game that is totally broken is not as high as it once was, because you can change it, you can fix it, whereas you probably couldn't back when we were younger, which is why things were more polished.
But I mean, I like that, that you said, the sheer reality of the fact that what you're putting out has to be your best work. And it's not that the teams, the creatives aren't doing their absolute best, but somewhere along the way, that idea that we can fix it later, we can patch it in later, or we have to hit this date or something like that. Like, those conversations have obviously been had. And I just, like I said, I feel like it's become endemic of this generation. But yeah, Kirsten, how much did glitches and patches or bugs and stuff kind of affect you when you were playing when you were younger?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really remember sort of small, goofy glitches, really. It was more, like game-breaking glitches that you would kind of get. So, yeah, it wasn't... But to be honest, obviously, they're a lot worse. And like you said, they couldn't really fix them back then. So if you did have a game-breaking glitch, it was like, well, I guess I'm never finishing that now. I think I remember Resident Evil 4, I had like a game-breaking glitch where all of the textures just stopped loading for some reason.
Nice.
So everything was just like black and I couldn't interact with anything. And so I couldn't actually complete Resident Evil 4 until it was re-released on like Xbox and stuff like that. So it was quite crazy to sort of get so far into a game and then be like, oh, okay, well, I guess I'll never know what happens. And it's taken this long for me to finally know what's going on, because like I said, nowadays they're just like, oh, here you go, here's a quick patch, that's fixed, you can carry on now. But does that make it acceptable nowadays? I don't know. It does still seem a bit cheeky to completely give you an unfinished game and be like, we'll fix it later, don't worry. Because like Josh said, that there are people that have that first impression. It's like, why would I play a game that's completely broken? I'm not going to let you just completely chuck out random fixes every now and then when someone puts their hand up going, excuse me, it's not working anymore. It's not acceptable.
I think it's always like a push and pull. Like, I mean, yeah, there are some examples of, like, obviously game development does continue past launch, that there's going to be things that are patched in, there's things that get changed. But for me, it is like a delicate line. And I don't know whether I get hung up too much on like the artistic side of it, where I'm like, okay, you have a set of creatives and they made something and that's their work and you're going to go play this thing and take it in and, you know, form your opinion and whatever. the idea that something is constantly in flux kind of always messes with that. And I love the idea of obviously being able to patch things and like tweak stuff going forward, and you have games as a service and stuff like that. But I guess, like, yeah, where do you come down on like how much the idea of that idea of patches being an inevitability of things like changing going forward, like, does that change the appeal based on like launch? Like, would you kind of always just hold off, like, if you found yourselves waiting and not getting as many day one releases?
Well, it's funny, right? A lot smarter people than me have always said that the game that launches at launch is always the worst version of that game, you know what I mean? Because whether it's more DLC, whether it's a drop in price, whether it's fixes, the game is fundamentally going to be better after, like, months after it comes out. And for me, I've never been able to shift that because I love buying things at launch. For me, the excitement is part of the, part of the appeal. But I understand that excitement has almost been weaponized by certain publishers expecting you to buy into it. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. they know people are going to want to be in the conversation at launch, so they know that we're going to overlook a certain amount of polish that might not be there and kind of understand that we aren't getting the best version of the game, but we're getting the earliest version of the game. We're going to be one of the first people to play it. We're going to enjoy it, and we're going to have a fun time.
The early thing as well. I mean, EA started the whole, like, 2 days early, 3 days early, like, that idea of just, I don't know, like, early being the thing that they can just cash in on and focus on and be like, look, as long as you're getting it early, that makes it okay. And, you know, like, somewhere in there, I think they expect that bugs and glitches will be okay because people understand, like, vague terms around early access or getting it early or patches and stuff like that. But I think that, like I said, over time, I think they have just started to take the pizzazz with it. And I just think there's so many examples of games that clearly just shouldn't have been shipped. And obviously Fallout 76 is one of them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Kirsten, do you tend to buy day one anyway? Or would you wait and be a more, conservative purchaser?
It depends on the game. If it's a game that I have always been in love with, like if it was a Bioshock game, Resident Evil, Dishonored, something like that, that I've always been a fan of and I've always bought the game, then yeah, I will buy it as soon as it's released. But like you said, I think with early access games, you have that kind of knowledge already. You think, well, it might not be 100% polished, but that's okay because it is early access. But when you are buying a game on launch, you do expect it to be at least relatively polished, I guess, but like, because you know that if they're releasing then it must be finished. But I mean, I've never really had the experience apart from with State of Decay 2, in which I really loved the first one. So as soon as the second one came out, I was like, yeah, I'll buy it. And that's the first time that I have bought a game that has not been my favorite game, but something I've enjoyed, and I bought on launch and was just very sorely disappointed. I think I played it for about an hour until I realized that I wasn't going to progress because of a game-breaking bug. And so I was just like, oh, okay, I've been wandering around trying to figure out what to do, and there is nothing to do because it's broken. So yeah, it took a good long while for me to forgive that game, but I'm okay with it now. We've put the bad thing behind us. But yeah, I usually try to wait for games that I like, but I'm not obsessed with, and that seems to pay off quite well for me.
You've spurred a memory. Oh man, I've just been reminded of something from that story there that's almost sent me into a fit of rage. I remember getting Fallout New Vegas on launch weekend, one of my favorite games of all time, top five, dead or alive. And that was notoriously full of bugs. You know, you had the doctor's head spinning around at the beginning. There's this one game-breaking thing where to get into the New Vegas Strip, which obviously is what the entire game is, you know, kind of focused around, that's the main hub area, you had to wear a specific cowboy hat, otherwise it would crash when you went to the loading screen into the next part. Obviously,
no way.
At the time, nobody knew about that fix or that workaround. There was just a game-breaking bug every single time you had to get into the main area. So I was just kind of sat there 2 days in, really enjoying myself, thinking, "Well, I can't follow the main story now. What am I supposed to do? I have to just wait around until either someone finds a workaround like the cowboy hat, or someone actually fixes it." And when you look into the development of that game more and more, you kind of you feel sorry for the developers, because Bethesda, which I'm sure we'll talk about quite a lot, because I think they have been the developer that and publisher that's really sort of fallen from grace in regards to this.
If there was a flag to fly, they're flying it very high.
Yeah, but you look into the development of New Vegas and you realize that Obsidian had 18 months to build a game that Bethesda usually makes in 4 years, you know what I mean? So it's undeniable and it's unsurprising that there are so many bugs that spring from that, you know what I mean? When you're a sucker for a release date, when you have a release date set in stone and you have to hit that by any means necessary, of course things are going to be broken and of course things are going to ship in an unfinished state, which sucks when it comes to a game like New Vegas, because that had real ramifications for the team and for people. You know, it was critically, I think it scored one Metacritic score under what it needed for the team to get a bonus, which apparently had severe financial effects. So when these bugs are taken into account like that, it has real ramifications for the teams, it has real ramifications for the games, has real ramifications for the game's kind of reception. New Vegas obviously is deemed perhaps the greatest Fallout ever made now, but it took a long time for it to get there.
Yeah.
It took a lot of commitment from people to overlook the issues that it almost definitely still has.
We should factor like scope in as well, because I like you said, the bigger the game, the more potential for it to go wrong. I remember there's a developer called Dave Lang who I think still works for Iron Galaxy, and he was talking about like, you know, you have to think of the games like the matrix of potential. It's like if you're going over here and you're picking this item up, you know, then like that can be put down X then somewhere else, and it depends what it's going to be put on. You need to think about what that item is made of, and it geomeshes with everything else, and it's like this affects this affects this. And he's like, you apply that to something like Fallout or, you know, any sort of open world RPG, and there are millions and millions of permutations of things that can go wrong. And so that tended to be the like tended to be the fallback for in Fallout. In Bethesda's case, it was like, well, no one else is doing this to this level of detail, and we have to expect that this is things are just going to go wrong. And then for me, CDPR and The Witcher came along, and I said, like, Witcher 3, you know, might have launched with a few bugs in terms of certain animation glitches and stuff. But for me, the CDPR kind of proved that you can do something as massive as that and have it be as interactive as that. And I know it doesn't have the junk system as like of Fallout 4, but you can have a massive open world RPG and have it be pretty damn polished. Like for me, it rolls back around into talking about Bethesda again. But I guess it's just that question of scope. Like, do you think the overall game scope needs to be reined in regards to some projects, or it's just if not, then it's a case of extending release dates to make it work?
Yeah, I don't think it's a case of necessarily reining the scope in, because we've seen games of, you know, mad scope and mad ambition be very polished. I think it is just publishers especially not understanding the reality of what that means for release dates and schedules and work and stuff like that. Of course it's going to, you know, take far longer to make a Fallout 3 than it is to make, I don't know, more Dead Space 1 or something like that. Not saying like there's more passion put into one than the other, but the sheer size of it, the sheer, like you said, the sheer permutations of things the player can do need to be accounted for, and that's a lot of manpower. And like I said, I've mentioned it a few times, I'm getting sick of the point, to be honest, I keep mentioning it. But when people are, you know, it's publishers putting release dates in saying, you have 2 years to make this game, make it, please, and hopefully we can ship it then, and if it's broken, well, it's broken and we're going to have to deal with it then. Like, that's just a weird mentality to kind of live by and create things by.
Yeah, if you're just kind of like counting the numbers, like counting the unit sales, looking at the costs and stuff, especially on digital purchases, there's no refund structure, like outside of like sometimes a couple of weeks at the most. And even that's dependent on how much game time you've had before you apply for the refund. So if you're just looking for unit sales and stuff, then it's like, well, you know, we shipped this much, we cashed in, you know, you can patch it later. That'll please the fan base. Like, that's it. The mainstream spotlight moves on to the next thing and everything just kind of carries on, which I think is why it's become such a massive like snowballing problem. But it's, yeah, that idea. Actually, I was going to say, Kirsten, like, where'd you come down on like the general idea of scope and delays, and like, should something just take as long as it takes?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just being realistic. It's having that communication with the devs and saying like, right, this is what we want. How long do you think it would take to get something like this done? Instead of just giving them that ultimatum, being like, no, this is how much time you've got, get it done. And if it's broken, it doesn't matter. We'll just release it and you'll fix it afterwards. It's just, it's unfair. It's be realistic, communicate with them, find out how long it would take to get something good done. And if it does go over, like if we know that it's going to be a good game and we can see the potential of it, we'll happily wait. Like, we've done it before, we're doing it now, you know, with the current situation that we're in. Yeah, it will upset people, and you know, there will be people that will probably kick off more than they should, but they'll soon come to realize that actually what people are, the reason for that is because they're just trying to make sure that you're getting a game that's worth playing, and that it's good and it's released in good condition. And I don't know, I just think that if someone turned around and said, sorry, it's not ready yet, give us another month or something, and it will be polished, it will be good, and there'll be no bugs, I'm happy to wait. You know, people need to kind of get over it and just actually understand what these people are going through in order to get these games to us.
Most of the time there's been like, oh sorry, I was gonna say just really quickly, most of the time there's been like a tweet or something just saying, hey, by the way, this game is being delayed. The overwhelming response is cool. Because like the amount of times it's gone wrong, it speaks for itself, but they just need to have more time. Sorry, Josh, what were you going to say?
No, sorry. I was just going to say, like, I remember when The Division 1 was coming out, because at the time that was like a hugely ambitious game that was blending, you know, a regular single player third-person shooter with MMO elements and stuff. And I remember when that release date was announced, and there were a bunch of leaks internally from people working on that game, the developers, who were saying, this is madness. There is no way we're going to hit that date. I don't know why Ubisoft has announced it. They're absolute nutters. It's not feasible. And of course, it wasn't feasible, and it got delayed. So I don't... It's a very strange thing, because even though a lot of people still, you know, have very very okay with things being delayed, because obviously it leads to a better product in the long run. There's still unneeded necessary press from announcing a release date that you know internally you're probably not going to hit. And then that goes into the question of, you know, the crunch needed to hit these release dates. And when there's nothing I that grinds my gears more than seeing these stories about, you know, developers putting their all into projects, crunching for months, if not years at a time, having the game come out, and then it's still getting slated because it's got a lot of bugs because it still needed more time anyway. I feel so gutted and deflated for them, because it's obviously it's not their fault. They're more or less pushing up against the time. And sometimes it's like mismanagement within the studio. I'm not saying it's all developers good and all publishers are evil or whatever, but it's just exacerbates the problem so much. And I don't know what the remedy really is.
I know, it's always like an ongoing conversation. I just think, like I said, there's been like a recent spate of really gorgeous games, like I said, like Red Dead 2 and Final Fantasy 7, and just they give such a bar. And it was just like going from, like for me, going from Final Fantasy 7 Remake to then looking at the same Fallout bugs again and just kind of being like, oh, like, yeah, this just needs to stop. Like Bethesda are more and more the outlier, especially when their contemporaries are able to do these massive large-scale RPGs and absolutely nail the scale without, you know, crazy, like looks like some time warps going on, some interdimensional black holes opened up in the middle of the game and everything's going to hell. So yeah, like I said, it's an ongoing conversation, so people can dive in. You can use the hashtag WCGP to submit your thoughts as well. We would do another question, but we're out of time, so we'll do some next time, so you can head over there to leave us some stuff. But for now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Goodbye.
And Kirsten Rhea.
Bye.
I'll catch you next time. Bye.
See ya.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.